Chapter 14. And Liney, partly because of the light, partly from the depth of the subject discussed. Gabriel broke the silence. W, what sort of a place is this to live at, and what sort of a missus is she to work under? Gabriel's bosom thrilled gently as he thus slipped under the notice of the assembly the innermost subject of his heart. E.D. know little of her nothing. She only showed herself a few days ago. Her uncle was took bad, and the doctor was called with his worldwide skill, but he couldn't save the man. As I take it, she's going to keep on the farm. Hat's about the shape out, I believe. Said Jan uncle was a very fair sort of man. Did he know N, be under him, as under one here and there? Her uncle was a very fair sort of man. Did he know N, shepherd a bachelor man? Odd at all. Used to go to his house a-courting my first wife, Charlotte, who was his dairymaid. Well, a very good-hearted man were Farmer Everton, and I being a respectable young fellow was allowed to call and see her, and drink as much ale as I liked, but not to carry away any outside my skin I mean, of course. Why, eh, Jan Coggan, we know your meaning. And so you see it was beautiful ale, and I wish to value his kindness as much as I could, and not to be so ill-mannered, as to drink only a thimbleful, which would have been insulting the man's generosity. Rue, Master Coggan, told so. Corroborated Mark Clark. And so I used to eat a lot of salt fish afore going, and then by the time I got there I were as dry as a lime basket, so thorough dry, that ale would slip down, ah. Twould slip down sweet. Happy times. Heavenly times. Such lovely drunks as I used to have at that house. You can mind, Jacob? You used to go why me sometimes. Can I can? Said Jacob. That one too, that we had at Buck's Head on a white Monday was a pretty tipple. Twas. But for a wet of the better class, that brought you no nearer to the horned man than you were afore you begun, there was none like those in Farmer Everton's kitchen. Not a single damn allowed. No, not a bare poor one, even at the most cheerful moment when all were blindest, though the good old word of sin thrown in here and there at such times, is a great relief to a merry soul. Rue, said the maltster. Nater requires her swearing at the regular times, or she's not herself, and unholy exclamations is a necessity of life. At Charlotte, continued Coggan, not a word of the sort would Charlotte allow, nor the smallest item of taking in vain. Eh, poor Charlotte, I wonder if she had the good fortune to get into heaven when a died. But a was never much in luck's way, and perhaps a went downwards after all, poor soul. And did any of you know Miss Everton's father and mother? Inquired the shepherd, who found some difficulty in keeping the conversation in the desired channel. Knew them a little, said Jacob Smulberry, but they were townsfolk, and didn't live here. They've been dead for years. Father, what sort of people were Missus's father and mother? L, said the maltster, he wasn't much to look at, but she was a lovely woman. He was fond enough of her as his sweetheart. Said to kiss her scores and long hundreds o' times, so 'twas said. Observed Coggan. He was very proud of her too, when they were married, as I've been told. Said the maltster. Why? Said Coggan. He admired her so much that he used to light the candle 3 times a night to look at her. Boundless love. I shouldn't have supposed it in the universe. Murmured Joseph Poorgrass, who habitually spoke on a large scale in his moral reflections. L, to be sure, said Gabriel. H, 'tis true enough. I know the man and woman both well. Levi Everton, that was the man's name, sure. M man. Saith I in my hurry, but he were of a higher circle of life than that a was a gentleman tailor really, worth scores of pounds. And he became a very celebrated bankrupt 2 or 3 times. H, I thought he was quite a common man, said Joseph. No, no. That man failed for heaps of money, hundreds in gold and silver. The maltster being rather short of breath, Mr. Coggan, after absently scrutinizing a coal which had fallen among the ashes, took up the narrative, with a private twirl of his eye. L, now, you'd hardly believe it, but that man husband's alive, after a while. Understand? I didn't want to be fickle, but he couldn't help it. The poor feller were faithful and true enough to her in his wish, but his heart would rove, do what he would. He spoke to me in real tribulation about it once. See, Coggin, he said, I could never wish for a handsomer woman than I've got, but feeling she's ticketed as my lawful wife, I can't help my wicked heart wandering, do what I will. But at last I believe he cured it, by making her take off her wedding ring and calling her by her maiden name as they sat together after the shop was shut, and so I would get to fancy she was only his sweetheart, and not married to him at all. And as soon as he could thoroughly fancy he was doing wrong, and committing the seventh, I got to like her as well as ever, and they lived on a perfect picture of mutual love. L, 'twas a most ungodly remedy, murmured Joseph Poorgrass. But we ought to feel deep cheerfulness, that a happy providence kept it from being any worse. You see, he might have gone the bad road, and given his eyes to unlawfulness entirely, yes, gross unlawfulness, so to say it. You see, said Billy Smallberry, the man's will was to do right, sure enough, but his heart didn't chime in. He got so much better, that he was quite godly in his later years, wasn't he, Jan? Said Joseph Poorgrass. He got himself confirmed over again in a more serious way, and took to saying men almost as loud as the clerk, and he liked to copy comforting verses from the tombstones. He used to hold the money plate at Let Your Light So Shine, and stand godfather to poor little come-by-chance children. And he kept a missionary box upon his table, to nab folks unawares when they called, yes, and he would box the charity boys' ears, if they laughed in church, till they could hardly stand upright, and do other deeds of piety natural to the saintly inclined. Why, at that time he thought of nothing but high things, added Billy Smallberry. One day Parson Thirdly met him and said, Good morning, Mr. Everton, 'tis a fine day. Amen, said Everton, quite absent-like, thinking only of religion, when he seed a parson, heir daughter was not at all a pretty chilly at that time, said Henry Frey. Never should have thought she'd have growed up such a handsome body as she is. 'Tis to be hoped her temper is as good as her face. L, yes, but the bailie will have most to do with the business and ourselves. Ah. Henry gazed into the ash pit, and smiled volumes of ironical knowledge. Queer Christian, like the devil's head in a cowl, he is, said Henry, implying that irony must cease at a certain point. Be between we two, man and man, I believe that man would as soon tell a lie Sundays as working days, that I do so. Oot faith, you do talk, said Gabriel. True enough, said the man of bitter moods, looking round upon the company with the antithetic laughter that comes from a keener appreciation of the miseries of life than ordinary men are capable of. Ah, there's people of one sort, and people of another, but that man bless your souls. Gabriel thought fit to change the subject. Why, you must be a very aged man, Malter, to have sons growed mild and ancient, he remarked. Athier's so old, that I can't mind his age, can he, father? Interposed Jacob. And he growled terrible crooked too, lately Jacob continued, surveying his father's figure, which was rather more bowed than his own. Really one may say that father there is three double. Crooked folk will last a long while, said the maltster, grimly, and not in the best humor. Hepburn would like to hear the pedigree of your life. Father wouldn't be, shepherd? Why that I should, said Gabriel with the heartiness of a man who had longed to hear it for several months. What may your age be, Malter? The maltster cleared his throat in an exaggerated form for emphasis, and elongating his gaze to the remotest point of the ash pit, said, in the slow speech justifiable, when the importance of a subject is so generally felt that any mannerism must be tolerated in getting at it, well, I don't mind the year I were born in, but perhaps I can reckon up the places I've lived at, and so get it that way. I bowed an upper long puddle across there, nodding to the north, till I were 11. I bowed 7 at Kingsmere, nodding to the east, here I took to Malting. I went there from to Norcombe, and malted there 22 years, and 22 years I was there turnip hoeing and harvesting. Ah, I note that old place, Norcombe, years afore you were thought of. Master Oak smiled sincere belief in the fact. T then I malted at Durnover 4 year, and 4 year turnip hoeing, and I was 14 times 11 months at Milpon St. Jude's, nodding northwest by north. Oh, old Twills wouldn't hire me for more than 11 months at a time, to keep me from being chargeable to the parish, if so be I was disabled. Then I was 3 year at Millstock, and I've been here 31 year come Candlemas. How much is that? 117. Chuckled another old gentleman, given to mental arithmetic and little conversation, who had hitherto sat unobserved in a corner. Well, then, that's my age, said the maltster, emphatically. No, father, said Jacob. Your turnip hoeing were in the summer, and your malting in the winter of the same years, and ye don't ought to count both halves, father. Hark it all. I lived through the summers, didn't I? That's my question. I suppose ye'll say next I be no age at all to speak of? Here we shan't, said Gabriel, soothingly. He be a very old-aged person, malter. Attested Jan must have a wonderful talented constitution, to be able to live so long, mustn't he, neighbors? True, true, he must, malter, wonderful, said the meeting unanimously. The maltster, being no pacified, was even generous enough to voluntarily disparage in a slight degree the virtue of having lived a great many years, by mentioning that the cup they were drinking out of was 3 years older than he. While the cup was being examined, the end of Gabriel Oak's flute became visible over his smock frock. I see you blowing into a great flute by now at Casterbridge. Who did? Said Gabriel, blushing faintly. I've been in great trouble, neighbors, and was driven to it. Take it careless like, shepherd, and your time will come tired. Either drum nor trumpet have I heard since Christmas, said Jan Coggan. Come, raise a tune, Master Oak. Had I will, said Gabriel, pulling out his flute and putting it together. A poor tool, neighbors, but such as I can do ye shall have and welcome. Oak then struck up Aki to the fair, and played that sparkling melody 3 times through, accenting the notes in the third round in a most artistic and lively manner, by bending his body in small jerks, and tapping with his foot to beat time. He can blow the flute very well that a can, said a young married man, who having no individuality worth mentioning was known as Usenthal's husband. He continued, I'd as lief as not be able to blow into a flute as well as that. He's a clever man, and 'tis a true comfort for us to have such a shepherd, murmured Joseph Poorgrass, in a soft cadence. We ought to feel full o' thanksgiving, that he's not a player of baddie songs instead of these merry tunes, for 'twould have been just as easy for God to have made the shepherd a loose low man, a man of iniquity, so to speak it, as what he is. Yes, for our wives and daughters' sakes we should feel real thanksgiving. True, true, real thanksgiving, dashed in Mark Clark conclusively, not feeling it to be of any consequence to his opinion that he had only heard about a word and 3/4 of what Joseph had said. S, added Joseph, beginning to feel like a man in the Bible, for evil do thrive so in these times, that he may be as much deceived in the cleanest shaved and whitest shirted man as in the raggedest tramp upon the turnpike, if I may term it so. Why, I can mind your face now, shepherd, said Henry Frey, criticizing Gabriel with misty eyes as he entered upon his second tune. Why, yes, now I see ye blowing into the flute, I know ye to be the same man I see play at Casterbridge, for your mouth were scrimped up, and your eyes a staring out like a strangled man's just as they be now. 'Tis a pity that playing the flute should make a man look such a scarecrow. observed Mr. Mark Clark, with additional criticism of Gabriel's countenance, the latter person jerking out, with the ghastly grimace required by the instrument, the chorus of Aim Durden. Hope you don't mind that young man's bad manners in naming your features? Whispered Joseph to Gabriel. Odd at all, said Mr. Oak. Or by nature ye be a very handsome man, Shepherd. Continued Joseph Poorgrass, with winning suavity. Why, the D.B., Shepherd, said the company. Thank you very much, said Oak, in the modest tone good manners demanded, thinking, however, that he would never let Bathsheba see him playing the flute, in this severe showing a discretion equal to that related to its sagacious inventress, the divine Minerva herself. H. When I and my wife were married at Norcombe Church, said the old maltster, not pleased at finding himself left out of the subject, they were called the handsomest couple in the neighborhood, everybody said so. And if he bain't altered now, malter, said a voice with the vigor natural to the enunciation of a remarkably evident truism. It came from the old man in the background, whose offensiveness and spiteful ways were barely atoned for by the occasional chuckle he contributed to general laughs. No, no, said Gabriel. Auntie play no more, Shepherd, said Susan Tall's husband, the young married man who had spoken once before. I must be moving, and when there's tunes going on I seem as if hung in wires. If I thought after. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.